would face a $75 fine. The committee also passed a bill that would ban texting while bicycling. Texting while driving is illegal in Illinois. The measures now move to the House floor. That's our noon hour look at WILL News. Our next report this afternoon at 4:30 during All Things Considered.
This weather forecast is made possible with support from the University of Illinois Employees Credit Union, a member-owned and not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to serve the complete financial needs of its members. The University of Illinois Employees Credit Union. Information is available on the web at uiecu.org.
Some much colder air is on its way to the region. A ridge of high pressure centered over southern Illinois will track across the Ohio Valley today and into the southeastern U.S. by tomorrow. This will bring some seasonably cold air into the region. But as the front passes, drier and colder air will move into the region for the weekend. Below normal temperatures are expected as Arctic high pressure over northwestern Canada settles into the Midwest. High temperatures today will range from the low 30s across northern Wisconsin to the mid-40s across western Kentucky and southern Missouri. Overnight low temperatures will range from the single digits above zero across northwestern Wisconsin to the mid-30s across southwestern Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois: this afternoon, sunny with a high of 36. The wind from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy, the low 28. The wind will be out of the southwest from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny. There's a chance of rain tomorrow morning, then scattered flurries in the afternoon. We'll see a high in the upper 30s, but the temperature will fall through the 30s during the afternoon tomorrow. The wind will be from the west at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy and colder, with scattered flurries. We'll see a low in the mid-teens. The wind will be from the north around 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25. Saturday, mostly sunny with a high in the mid-20s. The wind from the northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday night and Sunday, mostly clear with a low Saturday night in the low teens, the high Sunday in the upper 20s. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana were in the 30s. Most locations reporting a partly sunny or sunny sky. At Rockford, it was 33. At O'Hare, 34. Bloomington, 30. Mattoon, 33 degrees. And in Carbondale, it was 37. 33 degrees at South Bend and Terre Haute. Lafayette reported 32 degrees in Indianapolis, 30 degrees. Willard Airport reported a partly sunny sky, 34 degrees. The dew point 22, the relative humidity 61%. The wind out of the west at 9, giving us a wind chill of 27, and the barometric pressure 30.28 and falling. And at 1240, 33 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Labor unions planned a rally in front of the Arizona State Capitol this afternoon to protest four bills quickly moving through the state legislature that could make the labor laws passed last year by the Wisconsin Assembly look modest by comparison. NPR's Ted Robbins has the story.
Three of the four bills restrict the way unions collect dues and the way workers get paid for union activities. The fourth, the big one, bans collective bargaining between governments and government workers, state and local. Unlike Wisconsin, it affects all government employees, including police and firefighters. Republican State Senator Rick Murphy is sponsoring the bills.
It seems as though those employees, or at least the unions who represent them, don't care what the burden is on the taxpayer as long as they get theirs.
Murphy says collective bargaining lets public workers put themselves ahead of the public they're working for. The Phoenix-based Goldwater Institute, a libertarian-slash-conservative think tank, helped Murphy write the bills.
You're not in government to collect, you know, a fat paycheck.
Nick Dranias of the Goldwater Institute says public sector workers in Arizona make about 6% more in salary and benefits than their private counterparts.
You're in government to serve, and if you get paid reasonably, that's nice, But the moment you feel the need to organize collectively and create laws like collective bargaining laws that give you special privileges to negotiate and extract compensation not seen in the private sector, you've gone too far.
Arizona is also different from Wisconsin in that it's a right-to-work state. No one can be forced to join a union. So unions in Arizona already have less clout. Still, 80% of police in the state choose to belong to a union. Brian Livingston represents the Arizona Police Association, which is fighting the bills. He says police and firefighters typically get paid less in salary, but he acknowledges they negotiate better benefits and retirement plans. Livingston says cops deserve it.
With time we retire, we know that most of us will not live beyond what the average private citizen does. And I'm speaking specifically about public safety. The rigors of our occupation, the hazards of our occupation take a lifelong toll on our longevity.
Democrats in the Arizona legislature are outnumbered by Republicans 2-1 in the House and more in the Senate, where David Shapira is minority leader. He is appalled by the bills.
These bills are clearly the most anti-worker, anti-middle class, anti-union bills in the history of the country.
Shapira says the bills are purely political. They're being considered, he says, because union leaders tend to support Democrats over Republicans.
These are people that the Tea Party leadership at the state capitol in Arizona disagree with, and so they're punishing them, and that's the purpose of these pieces of legislation.
Bill sponsor Rick Murphy admits public worker labor unions are a political problem for him. The elected officials labor leaders are negotiating with, he says, are afraid to give in to unions for fear of political reprisal.
When the unions are the ones who are disproportionately influencing those elected officials, the elected officials are very rarely on the side of the taxpayer in those negotiations.
The swiftness of this new attempt at cutting the power of public worker unions took labor leaders by surprise. The bills were introduced just last week, passed through committee, and are now ready for a full Senate vote. Ted Robbins, NPR News, Tucson.
It's 12:44. Tai Chi, the Chinese martial art involving slow and rhythmic movement, has been shown to benefit older people by maintaining balance and strength. Now, as NPR's Patty Naiman reports, researchers have found that Tai Chi also helps patients who suffer from Parkinson's disease.
For Leona Maracle, the first sign that she had a problem was the shaking. She was a math teacher.
The students began to notice that my hands were trembling. And so I started learning how to compensate by keeping that affected hand under the table and use my other hand, my non-dominant hand, to pass out papers and to interact with the students.
Pretty soon it became clear that Maracle couldn't give her best, so she retired at 67. That was 2 years ago, about the same time she was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, a progressive disorder of the nervous system.
I would need to think two or three times about moving a particular part of my body. When I was sitting in a chair and wanted to get up, it took me two or three mental messages to go to my muscles to actually move my body.
Soon, Maracle had difficulty walking upstairs, downstairs, to the car, or just down the street. So when she heard the Oregon Research Institute was starting a study of Tai Chi to see if it helped Parkinson's patients, she signed up right away. The study was headed by research scientist Fusong Li.
We push with lean bodies forward, almost leaning towards our limits before you feel you need to take a step. And then
Lee demonstrates a classic Tai Chi pose called Part the Wild Horse's Mane. He shifts from one foot to the other, a graceful zigzag, his arms also moving like scissors back and forth. As he shifts, he leans forward in order to practice and build balance, something most people can do without thinking.
For example, reaching out for an object, transitioning from seated to standing or from standing back to seated.
In the study, Lee divided Parkinson's patients into three groups. One group did resistance training with weights, another stretching classes, and the third, Tai Chi. Each group participated in a 60-minute class twice a week for 6 months. When they finished, Lee found the Tai Chi patients were stronger and had much better balance.
Four times better than those patients assigned to stretching group. about 2 times better than those in the resistance training group in regards to improvements in balance.
And that led to significantly fewer falls for patients in the Tai Chi group. Leona Maracle says that before Tai Chi, she lost her balance 8 to 10 times a day. Now it hardly ever happens. She recently even saved herself from what would have been a sure fall before Tai Chi. It was raining and dark, and she tripped on the curb as she got out of her car.
Suddenly I have to make a little jump, which was unheard of before, but I kind of gave a little jump, and I brought my foot up above the curb and could steady myself on the ground next to the curb. That would have been a fall for sure 6 or 8 months ago.
Researchers don't know exactly how Tai Chi works to restore balance. UCLA brain scientist Dr. Michael Irwin says it may retrain areas of the brain that control movement.
There's a memory component of our nerves, and they're receiving signals from our body all the time that are integrated by the brain. And I think one of the things that happens with Tai Chi is it's bringing awareness of the brain to these areas of the body that we often sort of neglect, we sort of take for granted.
Things like balancing when we stand up or just walk. Now Irwin's researching other potential benefits of Tai Chi. Patty Naiman, NPR News.
WILL brings you a full range of information each day, news, weather, markets, and stories with human interest. A couple of times a year, we come to you to ask you for your financial support, and this is one of those times. And we have an added incentive when you call 217-244-9455 with a pledge of financial support. For every pledge of financial support WILL receives today, Common Ground Food Co-op will donate the cost of 8 meals to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Please take this opportunity to make your pledge twice as powerful. Support your local public radio station and help fight hunger right here in Central Illinois. The number to call, 217-244-9455. That's 244-WILL. Or you can make your contribution online at willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.org. Thanks.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, now on Route 45 in Savoy. At Subaru's assembly plant in Lafayette, Indiana, a zero landfill status is designed to save cost and our future. It's part of what makes a Subaru. Information online at SubaruofChampaign.com or 352-4700.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 9th of February, 2012. 1964, on this day, the Beatles appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show for the first time, teenage girls screaming in the audience. 73 million people watched for Home. It was a record for American television at the time. It was on this day, 1870, the National Weather Service was established. At first it was called the Weather Bureau. It was part of the War Department. Then 20 years later it came under the Department of Agriculture, then to the Commerce Department in 1940. These days the National Weather Service is based out of Silver Spring, Maryland. It's the birthday of the theoretical physicist Brian Greene, born in New York City in 1963, a professor at Columbia best known for his work on string theory, who has tried to explain theoretical physics to the general public in a number of books, including The Elegant Universe, Superstrings, Hidden Dimensions, and The Quest for the Ultimate Theory. It's the birthday of Alice Walker, born in Eatonton, Georgia, 1944, the youngest of 8 children, daughter of poor sharecroppers, who graduated first in her high school class, won a scholarship to Spelman College in Atlanta, transferred to Sarah Lawrence, and met Langston Hughes, who became an early champion of her writing. Began to publish poetry in the late 1960s, and it was with her third novel, The Color Purple, in 1982, that she reached a much larger audience. It won the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award in that year. And it's the birthday of the playwright and novelist Brendan Behan, born Dublin, 1923. His father took part in the Irish Rebellion of the early 20s. The father was in a British prison when the boy was born. By the time he was 16, Brendan Behan was being sent on missions to bomb British targets. He was thrown in jail for carrying a suitcase full of homemade explosives through the streets of Liverpool. And while in prison, he began to write. He wrote his first play, The Quare Fellow, and then the novel Borstal Boy and The Hostage, in which he wrote, "Never throw stones at your mother. You'll be sorry for it when she's dead. Never throw stones at your mother. Throw bricks at your father instead." Here's a poem for today by Marge Piercy, February Ground. 3 feet of snow in 24 hours on top of 7 inches. Not really credible here. On the fourth day, we found the car under a 6-foot drift and dug it out. At first, we could not open doors. The post office shut for